podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. Oh, Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hey, welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast. This is the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite shoes and get out there. Hey, this is Chris, your host, and wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great. I hope you're doing as great as I am. And I hope you're getting your run in today because I know I'm getting my run in today. And every day running is a good day. Each podcast, we're going to have a full agenda here. We've got some inspiration and some tips to keep you moving forward. And in our featured segment, we're going to be interviewing, we're going to be speaking with an interesting member of our sport. And they're going to share their accumulated knowledge and wisdom with us. And that's going to be very entertaining because I know some interesting folks. We know that you like to listen to your iPod. And you especially like to listen to your iPod when you work out. So we planned this podcast, the Run, Run, Live podcast, to last about 40 minutes. So it's going to be perfect for your daily jog or your commute to work or your time on the Stairmaster. There's millions of normal, everyday folks like us who exercise a couple times a week or use running as a way to lead a balanced and happy and challenging sometimes lifestyle. And would you like to learn from them? Because I've had the privilege over the last 10, 15 years to have kicked around the mid-pack of this sport for a while, and I've learned a ton about myself in running. I've met a whole bunch of incredible, sometimes odd, always interesting people, and we're going to try and share all this with you. So listen to the Run, Run, Live podcast and learn from the experts and the regular Joes and get that inspiration and affirmation that you need. All you have to do is go to the iTunes store, search on running, and subscribe to the Run, Run, Live podcast. It's free. It's going to be automatically downloaded to your iPod as new episodes become available. Also, you can come, once I get my website up and running, you can come to the Run, Run, Live website, runrunlive, all one word, .com, to get back episodes and show notes, and check out my blog, the Runnerati blog, and other interesting, cool, and compelling bits of stuff. I'm not selling anything. I'm doing this because I love the sport, and I want to share my love with everybody here. So, are you ready to have some fun? Come on. Let's go for a run.
With a smile on his lips and a wiggle in his hips, he would always wait as he was passing by.
And now for our featured interview.
Hey, today we're going to interview Eric Manzer. He's a friend of mine from my Toastmasters Club. Toastmasters is a place where you can give speeches, and it's public speaking training, and it's pretty good. It's, teach how to do public speaking. So if you haven't or struggled with public speaking, you're afraid to speak, or you've got some bad habits, a good place to go is Toastmasters. It's not a bunch of people sitting around drinking beer and making toasts. It's business people. It's regular people practicing their speaking, so it's a great deal. So anyhow, I met Eric, and Eric is an interesting guy. Picked up running. I watched him pick up running, and Eric has a unique challenge is that he's visually impaired, and Eric picked up running anyhow and has run the Boston Marathon as a qualified visually impaired athlete, and we're going to hear about that. It's a pretty cool story.
So how was your weekend?
Real good. So, a little bit waterlogged. I get congested after I do lake swims, so a little congested, but
you get some water in your ears?
I do. I'm usually able to get that out. It's the nasal congestion that's a little more challenging with the lake swims. I'm not sure why.
You know what I ended up doing?
What?
Is I ended up buying a pair of those nose clampy things.
Oh, yeah.
And putting them on my nose when I was doing laps, because when I get to the point where my form was getting good, I was so low in the water, and my roll was so, your roll is real important.
Right.
And my sinuses were filling up with water.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I'd be in a meeting after lunch, after swimming laps, and my sinuses would depurge, and it was awful. So I finally, it doesn't work 100%, but it helps. Yeah, so you get the earplugs and you get the nasal clamp, and you can go submarine or without filling your head with water.
Good thought, yeah.
Especially with the pond water, because you can get microorganisms on your insides that is a bad thing.
Yeah, the bacteria.
Yeah, get actually, it's typically more like protozoa and single-celled stuff living in ponds that'll get you. Bacteria will get you,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Some of the shallower ponds where the water's warmer.
Right.
But so you get your swim in.
Yeah, I've been 3 or 4 times a week I've been sitting it in, so feeling good.
Where do you go swimming?
It varies. The Fitchburg Y is where I go to do laps, you know, in a pool setting, and most often for lake swims, I live only a couple miles from Lake Whalum, which is by the old Whalum Park.
Sure.
And so, you know, go for a run a little bit before, and then plunge in off the boat launch, and then run a little bit after. It works out nice.
Awesome stuff. So you got to run in, too?
Yeah.
I put about probably 5 hours on my feet this weekend, had a couple of good long runs, feeling pretty strong.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But this is for my ultra training, for my 50-miler I'm training for.
Oh, are you? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I'm training for the Vermont 50. So it's all new for me. I'm learning stuff. I like, you know, that's what I like about running, is I can always learn something new.
Yeah.
The thing that I learned is I'm going to need to buy another pair of shoes, because you just can't run 2 days in a row like that in this wet stuff and expect your shoes to dry.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing I'm learning is I'm going to have to work on my nutrition better, because I'm starting to lose weight. And that typically isn't a problem for me. You know, it's like people say, you know, Chris, you weigh 200 pounds. Why is that a problem? But you got to make sure you're getting the right nutrition.
Yeah.
Keep your energy levels up during the day.
Well, the thing I found interesting, I've obviously never done an ultra, but I've seen, you know, some televised coverage. And the funny thing about the ultras is that, like, at the rest stops, at the water stops, they've got, like, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And,
yep.
You know, I mean, you're feeling up big time, so.
Yep, and that's what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, is it bananas? Is it, I'm trying a couple of new products. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, it's all learning. But we ran up Mount Watatic, me and a couple other folks, and my dog ran up Mount Watatic and over a little bit of the Wapak Trail out in Ashburnham.
Oh, no kidding.
And that was kind of cool. Yeah, we did that on Sunday.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that was cool. So anyhow, we were going to talk about what's really interesting, Eric. What I got really interesting from you, and a couple of things. One is I got to see you go from not running to being fairly consumed with it, which I always like to see. I always like to think I had some small part in that, too, just by, you know, setting an example. The other thing that I want to talk to you about is your vision impairment, which I think is really interesting. And because I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, you can describe to us what that impairment's like and how that affects your running and how you got through that challenge and kept running anyhow and basically have gotten to the same state as the rest of us consumed runners. And then, you know, talk to me about the Boston Marathon and how you're running the Boston Marathon as a visually impaired runner and what's that must be like, you know?
Right.
So, you know, the first thing that I wanted to, you know, because I remember, I know I'm talking too much, right? This was supposed to be an interview. When I first met you, we met in Toastmasters. Eric was president of the Toastmasters Club there when I was in it, giving speeches. And Eric was a little bit heavier and started running. So tell me about where you started and where you are now.
Absolutely. Actually, my background, believe it or not, was more a swimmer's background. I was that's what I had done competitively all through school. I was kind of the black sheep of my family. Both of my parents and my sister were all the runners, and I was really the swimmer. And so I, you know, all through high school and college, I was swimming competitively and actually got out of college and really sort of kept up a lot of the same, you know, bad habits, same eating and drinking habits. And so, you know, needless to say, my weight, you know, when I didn't have the exercise to offset it, my weight started to balloon a little bit.
A common ailment with us men.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And so it got to the point where one day, you know, at 250 pounds, I found myself having to put my knee off to the stomach, off to the side, around, you know, to get around my gut in order to tie my shoe. And I said, okay, you know, what's wrong with this picture? You know, I've got this athletic background, and, you know, now I'm just kind of fat and lazy and not doing anything and not feeling great about myself for it. So that was really sort of the realization that I had to start doing something. And so at that point I got out there and, you know, started pounding the pavement a little bit, just, you know, for the pure sake of weight loss.
Right.
And then...
And running's, you know, running's a tough weight loss tool, because when you're really heavy, it really hurts to run.
The joint?
You know?
You're right, yeah.
It just hurts to run if you're heavy. But
yeah,
you got to get through that, because it is a real efficient weight loss means, but you sort of have to get up to a certain frequency and a certain intensity in order to get those benefits. So there's a burn-in period.
That's
so I guess
exactly right.
I would caution anybody who's a beginner and looking to use running as a weight loss plan is you got to commit to 21 days.
Yeah.
You know, don't think it's going to be in a week.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I initially there, I was really doing about a mile or two here and there, and, you know, just for the sake of getting through exactly what you're describing. I mean, the joint pain and the shin splints and the whole nine yards, you know, I had all of it. And then as it evolved and, you know, I was doing it more and got, you know, gradually getting to a point where it just became an integral part of my routine, you know, and, you know, to the point where I feel as though I can't do without it.
Exactly.
You know, I really picked up on sort of the infectious nature of it and running into folks like yourself, Chris, and a number of other enthusiastic runners that I had met along the way, it just, again, really became infectious and something that I was excited about doing and passionate about doing and just really, I mean, the camaraderie and, you know, the benefits, aside from just the weight loss, have been innumerable and just, you know, varied and exciting. So, yeah, it's been an incredible journey, and, you know, as you know yourself, Chris, I mean, something that continues. I mean, it's an ongoing process, and you're learning new things all the time. So,
hey, so, but it isn't always easy for you, because during the same period, you started losing your vision, and you've got vision impairment, and you had to overcome that. And not only did you overcome it, but you also went out and qualified for the Boston Marathon and ran it a couple times as a visually impaired runner. So tell me about, you know, what this impairment is and what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, the condition that I have, I was diagnosed at age 3. It's called retinitis pigmentosa, and it's a degenerative eye condition that, you know, I guess the two main components of this eye disease are night blindness and limited peripheral vision. And so those two main factors, you know, I mean, when I was diagnosed, you know, really the night blindness was probably the most prevalent. And then, you know, as I'm aging, actually the peripheral field is closing in. And so over the last year, actually, my peripheral range has closed to within 10 degrees. So I do have some straight ahead vision. But where, you know, a normally sighted person has a peripheral range of, you know, up to and beyond like a 180-degree field, you know, my peripheral vision is down to within 10 degrees. So, again, you know, really the way I describe it is kind of like taking, if you were to take the cardboard toilet paper rolls and hold them up to your eyes, you know, like binoculars, it's kind of like that. It's a narrow, straight-ahead field of vision that I'm using. And so, you know, again, you know, it's a gradual process. I mean, when I was first diagnosed at age 3, I mean, my peripheral field was much broader than it is now. And again, it continues to narrow. And actually, within the last 4 or 5 years, I've had to give up driving. And, you know, so, I mean, it makes you really adaptable. And so taking on a sport like running, you know, it was something that I was able to make informed decisions about doing.
Right.
And so, you know, I plotted out a course nearby that I knew the layout, and, you know, in anticipation of my ever-changing visual abilities, you know, I wanted to be sure that I had a course where I know the layout, I know the terrain, and can kind of go out and, you know, and do it repeatedly if needed. So, again, I've got a 3-mile loop that I leave my front door, and I take a left, and I just keep taking lefts. And, you know, it's very
sure.
Predictable. It's, you know, I never have to cross any busy intersections or busy streets or anything like that. So predictability when I'm, certainly when I'm training by myself, is my friend. So, you know, it's, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, but you, a couple of years ago, you went ahead and qualified for the Boston Marathon, the BAA Boston
yeah.
Marathon, and ran that a couple times. And now I'm used to seeing these guys in the Boston Marathon and in the marathon coverage. The guys that can't see are tethered to someone who can see, and they have like this guide that they're sort of on a leash or holding their arm or something that they're doing this. So you're not doing that though.
Yeah, I mean the BAA and the Boston Marathon organizers are tremendously aware and very, very accommodating, and they're just really, have been amazing in terms of their openness and their open communication and, making options known. But, that is something absolutely that they make available to their visually impaired competitors. The ability to tether to a sighted guide is something that I have the option as a visually impaired runner to do. Though I just, knowing my personal situation, I guess, and knowing my own limitations, have kind of felt that to not be 100% necessary in my circumstances. See, the most challenging point in the race for me, just with the limited peripheral field, is the beginning, like the start
right.
of the race, where everyone is packed in like sardines.
Yeah, it's a zoo.
And
even getting to the corrals is a zoo. I mean, I've done 10 Bostons, and they've changed over the years, but it's still a crush in the beginning.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. If I were in the same setting, like walking through an airport or walking through a busy mall, I have a white cane that I use. And, in that setting, it's, largely to let others know that, you got a 200-pound guy here that might step on your toe. But in a race, I haven't been using the white cane in running a race. But what I have been able to do is find some willing partners to team up with. And I've got some very selfless runners that have agreed to let me shadow them. And so, what happens is in that initial congestion where it's so packed in a race, I've got some guys that, that run roughly the same pace and have roughly the same target times that I have. And so what I do is I just mirror, shadow them. I get right behind them like single file.
Yeah, you stick on their shoulder.
Exactly, yeah. And so what that eliminates is, the tendency of other runners, through, nothing malicious and no fault of their own, but it stops people from kind of, jutting across my field of vision, which, from my perspective in that scenario, it really feels as though they're appearing out of nowhere.
Right.
Which can be scary, so.
Yeah, and, in the pack at Boston, people are so amped up on adrenaline and Gatorade that they're jumping all over the place trying to find a clear lane. You're absolutely right.
You're exactly right, yeah. Jockeying for position and it can be a really daunting scene. And, I would hate to, to trip someone up or trip over anyone and cause a big crash or anything like that. So, yeah, really the ability to get behind another runner and just shadow them. I'm on them like white on rice, as they say, and, I kind of don't, we don't really let enough distance get between us so that anyone could fill that space. So it makes it a safer event and much more predictable and has worked really well.
So then you get out around 5 miles and you let those guys go and you just continue the race on your own.
That's right. The thing I like about it is, the thing I like about not being tethered is that there's no obligation. Once the crowd does break open, as you said, like around mile 5 or 6 at Boston, there's no obligation. If they're having a stronger race or if, I'm starting to crumble or vice versa, then there's no, requirement for either, of the two parties to stay close. They're not committed to me for the entire race, depending on what kind of race they're going to have. If it works out and, we keep, running the same pace and stick together, then it works out that way. But, I like not requiring or not feeling as though I'm requiring anyone to alter their race in any way. So
sure, you're not going to be lost and running in circles if you if the person takes off or
exactly
gets
yeah.
slow or whatever. Yeah, that's fine. Because it still gets confusing out there, especially in the water stops. So being visually impaired, your other senses must be heightened. So you must have some great smells and I can't imagine what the roar of the girls at Wellesley College sounds like coming in, for you.
Yeah, that's a scene, man. That's an incredible, like the first time I ran through there, it was like, you feel like one of the New England Patriots running out onto the field.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's seriously like running through a stadium. And, I mean, talk about getting you, if you didn't have a second or a third wind already, then that's enough to pump you up. So,
yeah, I like to say you see all the old guys, you know, sucking in their stomachs and sticking their chest out as they jog through there.
Oh, yeah, well, or the middle-aged or younger guys, too. I mean, you know, it's an impressive group to be running through. So, yeah, it was, I mean, all the support. I mean, that Boston is, you know, absolutely among the best races because it's just, like, support all the way along. And, you know, everyone is so energetic and enthusiastic, and it's just a great day.
Yeah, I've heard people call that the scream tunnel.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. Yeah, if you're trying to hear any, if I were running and taking verbal cues from my partner that I was running with at that point, then, you know, that might be in jeopardy. But no, unfortunately, you know, fortunately that wasn't the case. But yeah, the benefit of that kind of support is tenfold. So it's awesome.
So what are you training for right now?
Well, right now I'm loosely sticking to a 2-marathon-per-year schedule. So
you run the Cape, right?
That's the first marathon I ever did. That's where I qualified for Boston as a paired runner. That's where I qualified the first time. And then
I warned you about that race, didn't I?
Oh, you did. Yeah. Yeah, I can't say I didn't go in with some heads up. So, yeah, I mean, that was it's a nice course. I mean, you can't
it's
beat
pretty.
The scenery. And, yeah, very, very pretty. And, you know, and then Boston is its own course. It's a very challenging course. I intend to be doing Boston, you know, probably each year, and then my hope is to also get a fall marathon in each year. I'm not going to do the Cape this year. Actually, the marathon for this coming fall that I was planning on doing was the Newport. I guess it's called the Breakers Marathon.
Right. The new one down in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Cool.
Newport, Rhode Island. So.
So you got to start doing. You got to start training right about now.
Yeah, well, we're amping up the mileage a little bit, and starting to throw that longer run back into Saturday mornings. And
yep, a little bit of speed work.
Yep. Tuesday night speed work. Yeah, we have a track workout with a nice coach who's knowledgeable and takes us under his wing, so it works out well.
That's awesome. So, what are you most proud of through this process?
Well, I'll tell you that I'm absolutely, I would say I'm most proud of the kindness and support and the great feedback I get from other people who are either runners or athletes or are just becoming runners, you know, as we were talking about before. Like, every once in a while, they'll do like a feature article on me, just leading up to the Boston Marathon, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette printed a nice, really nice article.
Oh, no kidding. That's great.
Yeah. It was kind of neat. And, it's kind of an adjustment for me because I hate to come off as boastful in any way. So, you know, I try and, you know, keep everything in perspective. And the way I like to look at it is, you know, having sort of the visual limitations that I have, it's, you know, really just a different way of existing. You know, I mean, everyone's existing in a certain way, and, you know, you kind of deal with the hand that you're dealt type of thing. And so, like, you know, my goals for, you know, my target times, you know, for goal race running, and, you know, all of that is, I mean, we're all out here doing the same thing. And,
yep.
You know, we've all got goals. We all want to improve, and so everyone is kind of, you know, striving in the same way. And so when I have something that talks about my sort of unique challenges that's printed and produces great feedback and people expressing to me that they feel inspired and motivated, you know, you can't beat that.
You know? No, that's great. Then you feel like you made a difference in the world, right?
You're exactly right. I mean, it's like, you know, like, if anyone feels motivated to get off, you know, change anything and get off the couch and get out and run a mile, then, you know, it's worth it, you know, every ounce of effort. So, you know,
so,
I would say that's the most pride-inducing.
So I'll ask you the hard question that I ask everybody. Why do you run?
Why do I run has changed. You know, again, initially it was purely weight loss, and the rewards that have come have just been, you know, too numerous to mention. My wife and I have a daughter who's 2 years and 9 months old, and we've got our second daughter on the way in August.
Yay.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
So, Thanks very much.
She's gonna be psyched to be 9 months pregnant in the middle of August.
Oh yeah,
I've been there before. Yeah, I've been there before. One of mine is the August 16th baby.
Oh wow, that's my wife's due date.
There you go.
August 16th.
That's small world.
So, yeah. So my wife is prepped with the AC and the pool and the whole nine. But, you know, like to see, like whenever, obviously I don't drive myself to track practice each week, so my wife, you know, and daughter each week come and pick me up at track. And so now my daughter, who's 2 years and 9 months old, it's a must-do, you know, at the end of a hard workout, she must get out there and run at least one or two laps with Daddy. It's cool.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's like, I get chills to see that, you know. And so.
Yeah, I love the way kids don't know they're not supposed to like it. Right?
I know.
They get to be teenagers, and that changes.
Yeah. And, you know, so, I mean, the reasons change. And, I mean, I'm so blessed to be able to be out there and doing that with my daughter. And so, I mean, that's just huge. And, you know, it's made me incredibly, I know that Chris can relate to this, it's made me incredibly close with our border collie. You know,
yep.
The border collie that I go out every day, and, you know, she'll do, you know, anywhere from 3 to 10 miles with me. And so,
how old's your border collie?
She just turned 4, actually.
Just turned 4, so prime of the life.
Yep.
What's her name?
Her name is Charlie, despite the gender.
That's okay.
There's sort of a funny joke. You know, since our last name is Manser, we knew we'd never have a Charlie Manser. So.
Yeah, it's kind of sick.
Kind of sick joke, yeah. So Charlie Manser is a...
Is it the black and white one?
Yep, absolutely, yeah.
Yep, just like Buddy. All right.
Yeah, so she does all the, I mean, you know, I'll run 10 miles with her, and then she'll come home and still want to be doing the frisbee and
exactly.
agility and the fly ball, so I can't wear her out. But
Yeah, you know. It's great. Border Collie's the best dog in the world, and they're so smart.
Oh, unbelievable. It's amazing.
Great running dog. So you got some cool tech toys.
I do.
You were telling me about.
Let me, can you hear this? I don't know if you caught that. That's my talking watch that I have come to rely on. I mean, you know, I get a lot of these.
Is that your wife's voice?
No. She'd probably prefer that. Yeah. You know,
it's time to stop running and go home.
Yeah, go home and make dinner. No, it's just a voice that comes with the watch. But I was amazed to find that they offered such a thing because. You know, and I get these catalogs with assistive devices for people with low vision and blindness. So I was surprised one day to be flipping through, and I saw that they have a talking stopwatch, which I was thrilled by because I've in the past had like an Iron Man watch and, you know, some of the watches. And, you know, especially, you know, as my vision declines, you know, to be running, either working in a hard sprint set or running, you know, at mile 18. You know, it's hard to kind of look at your jostling wrist and stop and focus on it. So, you know, so it's nice to have this watch that you can kind of check and get an audio readout at any point. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you and I were talking about this before. There's something about running that does something weird to your eyes. Something like increasing the circulation or something. Because I noticed, you know, when I first started running, I noticed my eyesight got better. And it was weird. So
it makes you sharper. I mean,
we don't have clinical evidence, but we believe it in our heart.
Yeah, I believe that. I'm a firm believer in that because I know that last July, I actually had my wisdom teeth out, you know, years after the normal time for people to have that done, I guess. But, and to my dismay, I actually wound up missing about, I think it was 4 days worth of running. And so by the time I got back on the fifth day and got back out there, you're absolutely right. I noticed that, you know, I didn't feel like my focus was as sharp. I felt like, you know, that I didn't feel as safe out there just because I felt like, you know, the vision had dulled a little bit over the missed days. So, yeah, there's absolutely something to that.
That's cool. Hey, I got a question for you. What's your favorite music? What's music you have on your iPod?
Well, it's funny. I'm kind of, you know, ever since I passed 30, I mean, as a younger man, it would have been all like hard rock or, you know, even metal. You know, I've got a lot of more adult contemporary stuff. I mean, my favorite band of all time is Led Zeppelin.
Okay. I wouldn't call that adult contemporary, but okay.
No, I'm kind of putting that in as a disclaimer. But, you know, some more, if I look at what's on my iPod list versus what's on my purchased, you know, my recent purchases for my iPod are like Jack Johnson, you know, kind of folksy, well, not folksy, but, you know, acoustic guitar. You know, I've got more Nickelback, which is kind of on the harder edge, but, you know, you can hear them on like an XLO or,
right.
know, or adult contemporary station. But, yeah, I mean, so some of the harder edge stuff that I used to listen to that would really pump me up, and especially, you know, now as we're starting to see the Olympic trials, and, you know, I remember myself being, you know, sitting next to the pool waiting for my event to come up and have the headphones on, and I had Metallica playing. Well, that's kind of softened these days, you know, so... Yeah, it's
that's the effect of age.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, because I put music on the on my I think they call it the out something. The there's the beginning and the end, and the very end is the out. I put music in there, so I'll go find some music like Jack Johnson or Nickelback, and I'll stick it on there.
Oh, cool.
I was talking to another guy, Anthony, in the last show, and he was all death metal. So.
Oh boy. Well, Tool. I love Tool. Got any Tool? Throw it.
Oh, I hate Tool.
Oh no.
Oh, you kids and your hard rock and roll.
Oh, I know. Darn hippies.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're gonna wrap it up. Thanks for talking. And we're gonna have to go out and get a run in sometime.
Yeah, that sounds great, Chris. And thanks for thinking of me, and I appreciate you asking me.
We'll get the dogs together. They'll have a blast.
Yeah. That
there you go.
Good.
All right. Hey, have you taught your border collie how to swim? Does she like to swim?
It's not natural. You can tell that. But if I get in and I go out, you know, 50 yards, then she, you know, she can't help herself but plunge in. And
she has to save you.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
She has to save you.
She'll get out to me, and then she'll quickly return to shore, you know. But, I mean.
Buddy went from that, the afraid of water, to just swimming laps now. If I go down to the lake, he'll just swim laps.
Oh, nice.
He's a hoot. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I was out with him yesterday in this pond, and he was just swimming around the center of the pond with me. It was the funniest thing. So there you go. It's a learned thing. They're smart dogs.
Oh, they are.
All right, man. We'll talk to you later. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I just came back from the mailbox here on my way home from work and hear that rustling. That's me open up my envelope, and I had my official letter from the Boston Marathon, and I'll read it to you. It's very colorful, too. They've gotten much more colorful in these certificates over the years. This year was my 10th Boston Marathon, and I had a blast. I got a shirt that I had everybody sign, everybody I could find, strangers on the street, just random people. Everybody signed my shirt with well wishes and funny stuff and pictures and everything. It was really cool, so I ran in that. And I got hanging in my office now, and my mom made me a quilt out of all my old Boston long-sleeve T-shirts. So it's really cool. I got that hanging on the wall in my office. I was very touched. So anyhow, what does it say? It says 112th Boston Marathon, April 21st, 2008. Boston Athletic Association, blah, 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 John Hancock, Christopher J. Russell, successfully completed the 112th Boston Marathon. And then there's a time. I guess I can share my... I typically shy away from sharing my times and articles and online and in podcasts because it seems kind of self-serving, and you always get in people saying, yeah, I'm faster than you are, but I don't really do it for speed anymore. I ran a 3:27:27 chip time, and that, believe it or not, gives me 5,932th place in my gender. That's male, by the way. It would be 5,041. And my place in the Masters division was 1871. So I don't know how many of that's out of. I know there's about 20,000 plus people there. So, and it's signed by Thomas Grilk, Guy Morse, and Dave McGilvery. All right. Boy, they must get tired signing all these 20,000 certificates.
And now for the equipment check.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm out on the trails with my running buddy here, Buddy the Wonder Dog. You can hear him in the background. He's sloshing through a, a good wallow in a stream here. I'm standing on a Boy Scout bridge. The Boy Scouts built this bridge across Beaver Brook. For you people from New England, that would be Beaver Brook. And out running with my border collie, I'd let you talk to him, but he only knows a few words. He's actually a fairly intelligent dog, great dog, very docile, loves to run. And again, for you New Englanders, that would be Wicked Smart. He's probably got a vocabulary of 25, 30 words, and he goes running with me. One of the things, if you're out running with your dog in the summertime, you know, dogs don't sweat, so if you go by some streams or some ponds, even if the water's not that cool, if they can get in there and wallow a bit and get their under fur soaked, that cools them right down. It's just like you or I working up a good sweat. So let me paint the picture for you here. It's a beautiful afternoon here in New England. We're out doing, you know, we'll do 10K, 12K in the woods here. I'm lucky enough to back up to the conservation land, and I'm standing over a stream that's meandering through the woods. It's probably about 10 feet wide, nice clear water. And you don't think of New England this way if you're not from here, but it's in the summertime, it's like a rainforest. There's a full forest canopy here, and the old stone walls meandering through, and the ferns. It's really quite beautiful. And, you know, you got to look around, because I don't live in the country, really. I'm probably only 30 miles crow fly from Boston, but we have a ton of conservation land, so if you look around, you can typically find some gems. And, you know, what typically happened is, you know, nobody could build here because it was too swampy, or there was too many hills, or you know, it just wasn't good development land back in the 50s or 60s, so they passed it over. But it's perfect for running because it's got ridges and swamps and all kinds of great places to run. You know, the bugs are a little bad sometimes, and the poison ivy's rough, but I'll give you some strategies for that as well. So I'm going to take off with Buddy here and finish my run. It looks like he's cooled down, got himself a drink, and I'm going to go.
All right, my faithful friends, that brings us close to the end of this podcast, and that's pretty cool because we're right on 40 minutes. You heard Eric? Eric wants something sort of Jack Johnson-like, so I'm going to cue up some of that. I got a nice little ditty to close the show with, because I listen to a lot of these podcasts, and they all start the same way. The first episode, the guy says, or the person says, this is going to be 15 minutes long. And then by the second episode, it's an hour and a half. So, you know, people just don't know how much wind they got in their sails till they start talking. We'll see you next week. Got a cool one. Looking to grab another friend of mine who has another compelling story about breaking 240-something at Boston this year, an old guy like me. I got to stop interviewing old guys. We're going to have to change the name of the podcast to the Hairy Back and Wrinkly Knee Podcast if I don't find me some young women. All right? Bye. This is from the PodSafe Music Network, and it's called All I Ever Want. The band is 27 Years. Enjoy.
come running back to me.